Let's give him a word.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Guy. I'm an alcoholic. Hey. And thanks to a loving God and the good people of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink or drug since December 7th of 2009, Pearl Harbor Day, although I don't think that was a surprise to anyone. I wanted to express my gratitude to this meeting. This is the first time I've been here, but I've heard speakers from here, and when I've traveled and I've been in a hard place, a sales conference in Las Vegas, for example, I hadn't been able to get to a meeting that day. I'm taking a late flight out. I listened to Frank Benetti. He's passed away, I think it was 2007, and I always get a great comfort from that. So this group I owe a great debt to, and I want to thank you for that. And thank you for asking me to come out and speak tonight. Also, I would usually have a tie and a jacket on, but I just moved into a storage locker yesterday, so that will not be. This is as best as I got. I have a sponsor and a home group. I have service. I'm lucky enough to sponsor a couple few guys, and that doesn't make me Captain AA or anything, But those are really truly the human components of what this book is about. You know what I mean? I know in the old days they used to get this book shipped to them, I guess it says, and people could read it, and they would have this experience, and they could follow these steps on their own. But I've read lots of books, but I just don't think that would have worked for me, and it's the people in AA that have shown me all that. My sponsor, you guys, doing service, and sponsoring other men. It's been a lot to me. Where do I start? Well, heck. Don't have a drinking problem. I've got a living problem for sure. Thank God for AA. And if anyone here in this room or anyone who can hear my voice right now, wherever you may be, just know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. It absolutely works. And if you go to bed tonight not knowing anything else, please know that, And all you need is to be willing and honest. In my experience, it's so true. Willing and honesty, it's all you need. You can recover. And have a great life to boot. Pretty sweet. When I was growing up, I was kind of out there in Fishkill, New York. Drinking was around, certainly. I remember it. My old man, he's heavier than me and had a cheesy 70s goatee and the glasses, and they drink these short little beers. You ever seen them little like shorty bottles, Budweiser? And him and my old man, his brothers are all out there, big, I don't say my last name, guys, S guys. And I want to be like my old man. That was interesting to me. It's like the guys were out there and the gals were over there, and that's what they did, And I found that attractive, So drinking was kind of around my life, but not in any heavy way. And a couple few things about me, I guess, without getting blown up into a big childhood, dialogue. But from an early age, I was told, or at least I heard, that I was mentally defective. And that I was never really going to hack it in any kind of normal institutional learning environment. And so sometimes you'll hear people joke about, like, the short bus, Like, I had to take the short bus to school. Well, my school bus was a old Buick station wagon with a spray-painted yellow sign welded to the top that said school bus. And this thing would come and pick me up and take me to church basements, oddly enough, and some other areas, whatever, municipal facility they had us kids in. And there were kids with some severe emotional problems and some other things, So when people say, I felt less than, I felt broken, I felt different, like, I understand what that feels like. And the anxiety, no matter how hard a shell you try to put out there, there's something in there, a little turmoil, And so I had that in my life, And something else, too, when I was a little bit older, probably 13 or 14, I accidentally shot my brother in the head, with a very high-powered pellet gun, and it pierced his skull. It's still in there today. He's alive. Actually lives on the edges of society in Colorado. And it's hard for me to say that, did his life turn out like that because of me? A mistake I made, The reason I mention that is if anyone can hear me now who has guilt in their life, I know what that feels like. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to the poet Mary Oliver. And in one of her poems, I was at a spiritual retreat. She's a beautiful writer. And she talks about, if you carry in your side a thorn that is heavier than lead, and that's what guilt is, It's heavy. It weighs on you. You think about it in the shower. You think about it at night. You know what I mean? And it can affect so much in your life, you know? And as an older brother who does that to a younger brother, well, you get the picture. Guilt, you know? So I had some chaos going on and turmoil, you know? I drank the first time, and some people say it was like this electrifying experience and all this. I think something did happen. I'm sure I drank before this. They did say when I was a toddler I might swig a few beers from the party or something. I don't remember that, you know what I mean? But I do remember one time we were on a family vacation in Mexico. It was a couple years after this thing with my brother. And then by this time I kind of been reinserted almost 2 years back. But my mother was like, no, only a year back because, he's so big, he'll be a freak. You know, so, but anyway, I'm kind of like back in the mainstream of school somewhat, and this thing with my brother, and we're down in Mexico, my old man hands me a handful of pesos, you know, these are like, things look like $1 billion bills, you know, with all zeros on them, and I go down with my cousin Pam, she's a nice looking gal, and I'm walking down the street, and down there in Mexico, you know, the cops, at least at the time, carried like big assault rifles, you know, it's not like, you know what I mean, they're like military guys, and I don't speak the language, I'm a little nervous, you know, these guys are like, eesh. And, you know, I have to protect my cousin Pam, and, you know, we wander in the cantina, we start drinking, man, you know, and I don't speak Spanish, I knew what the guy was telling me, though, like, damn, young fella, where are you putting all that, you know, like, he was saying something, I just drank as much as I wanted to, and I loved it, and I have a constitution for alcohol, I'm built for this, you know, I could drink a lot from Jump Street, and I was eating shrimp and just drinking beer all night, right? Not a bad deal. And, you know, when I walked out of that bar room, you know, she was pretty sick, and she's kind of hanging on me, and I can feel all, you know. But when I walked out of there, I saw those very same cops in a strange street in Mexico, and I'm by myself walking towards this hotel, you know. I remember I felt like John Wayne, you know what I mean? 10 feet tall. When I sauntered by those guys, it's kind of like, you know, I was feeling all right, you know, and I think in the beginning, man, that's what really what alcohol did for me. It wasn't necessarily fixing that turmoil, which I most certainly had, but couldn't put a word to or anything, you know, I'd say everything was fine, you know, but it made everything more better, which I'm sure has been proper English, more better, you know, I mean, why wouldn't you want to drink something that made me feel like John Wayne, you know what I mean? And, you know, it went along like that. And in school, I never had great aspirations. It was all about beer, bong hits, and babes. You know what I mean? It was about smoking weed and drinking and trying to get girlfriends and maybe several girlfriends, you know. And I had played football, and, you know, life was okay. I wasn't some stellar student. I didn't have any expectations, you know. But I did notice, even back then, that I liked to take my own counsel when I did feel that turmoil, you know. Like, it wasn't like, hey, you know, Dad, or hey, Joe, or my best buddy, Ray, that we do everything. We're running buddies. You know, we got into all kinds of crazy stuff. I would never tell him that. I would go down by a river, or I'd go to the mall by myself, smoke a little weed. I didn't really have a lot of access to alcohol at that point, although I would later, actually. And, you know, I just took my own counsel. I want to be by myself, and I will wrestle with this turmoil on my own, like a black serpent, you know? And that's just the way I've always been, I guess, you know. And I remember I ended up getting to this, like, big university in Boston. It was like almost like a community college baked into a bigger university. You know, they called it the School of Basic Studies, but everyone called it Coloring Book School. You know what I mean? Like, they made fun of you, you know. And I went there, and, of course, I also have this other thing, too, where I really like what it says in the appendix on spiritual awakening, a contempt prior to investigation, that quote from Spencer. You know, I lived my whole life like that for no reason. I was just like, I would politely listen and nod my head, oh, yes, that's a good idea. Even like it'd be a lawyer or a doctor talking, I'm like, this guy doesn't know anything, you know? Like, you know, and, you know, I went to school and I thought I just knew everything and, of course, almost failed out, you know, and all this. You know, and actually, right when I started, and I like to say this story sometimes, too, you know, I have a relationship. At that point, this relationship with alcohol was well-founded. You know, it didn't bring me the relief I knew it would bring a little bit later, perhaps. I just knew I liked to drink, you know. And, but when I was early in college, I was going to this little, back then they didn't have CVSs, like local pharmacies, you know what I'm saying? And maybe you guys still have those out here. I hope you do. But anyway, I was walking around. There was this little, like, humidifier on sale for, like, $5. And I'm a lazy person. I didn't have a job at college. But I had just enough to, like, buy, you know, a couple rounds of keg parties every week. you know, and a couple six packs and eat once a day. You know, I had a little bit of money, but $5, big expenditure for a humidifier. And I'd buy this humidifier, and then we'd go to the Packy or the liquor store. Instead of buying beer that night, I bought a cheap jug of vodka, like the plastic container kind, with like a stenciled old dot matrix printer name on it, you know. And my roommate's like, "What, you know, what's this all about?" I was like, "Dude, I've got the greatest idea ever. It's called the Vaporizer 2000. We're going to take vodka and pour it in the humidifier and just inhale vodka vapor." You know, like, ingenious, you know? And everyone always said, "Well, did it work?" Who knows? You're drinking vodka, too. The chicks sure thought it was an interesting concept. But, you know, the reason I mention that is, like, that's not because I like to have a beer to unwind to watch the football game. That's not because I like, a gin and tonic on a nice spring day by the cafe, you know. It's because alcohol does something for me. And the actual romanticism and all this other crap I can wrap around it that you might see on commercials and stuff, normal people that have that lifestyle don't inhale vapor, you know, vodka vapor. It's not something that occurs to them, you know. Alcohol did something for me, and I wanted it in, and because I have a constitution for this stuff, I always had, and that did change towards the end, certainly, you know, but that's the way I am. It did something for me, and I liked it, and I wanted it in there, and I wanted to feel that shift sooner rather than later, you know. And so something else happened interesting when I was, when I was in college. I'd almost failed out, and all of a sudden it was like, I could take night courses. They wouldn't fail me out, but I was like on a, you know, get right with the program here, pal, you know, and I could take night courses. And if I maintained a certain grade point average, I could matriculate still into the university. And I really liked that. You know what I mean? One is I could start to take classes I liked, you know, because it's all about what I like and not about what is required. And they were longer classes, and they were all at night or pretty early or late in the afternoon. And I love that. You know, I am not a morning person, you know what I mean? Like, wake up around the crack of noon, you know, get a little coffee in me, have a few cigarettes, you know. And so I started going to this night class, and something happened about that time where, well, one is I discovered this great new invention called spell check on a computer. It just come out. And so my grades took off a little bit from that. But but really what happened was my mind felt like I was like, it was just making connections. You know what I mean? Like ones I had never had before. I was reading fairly voraciously now. And I was learning about history and philosophy, just enough philosophy, by the way, to be dangerous to myself and others. And it felt like this thing was a rocket ship, you know what I mean? And in that moment, you know, I remember, I was like, you know what? Those people, they have got me all wrong, you know, all wrong. And those people, they don't know a damn thing about me or what's good for me or what I need. You know, it was real projection onto doctors or, you know what I mean, man? It was like, I know what's good for me. You've got me all wrong. You know, and that for a stubborn SOB like me, I was just talking to my man, Scott, over there, you know, and I love my own thinking, you know? And at that point, especially about certain philosophies, Heidegger, Nietzsche, some other people, rugged individualism from Ayn Rand, you know, I had gotten it into my head that, like, this is what's important. My law, not your laws. You know, my reality, not your reality. You know, and it became a very stubborn and hard shell. You know what I mean? And I could refute anyone about what was good for me. I wouldn't listen to you. You don't know. You know, and alcohol, you know, really was a good part of my life. You know, and it would become more so a little bit later in this period, but I mention that because I'm stubborn. I love home cooking, you know, up here. You know, I love to eat it all the time. And I don't like yours, I like mine, you know. But, you know, my great-grand sponsor mentions quite a bit that defiance is certainly a unifying characteristic of alcoholics. We are defiant by nature, you know, spiritually and in a lot of other ways. So, you know, so I got out of school and I actually got a job down in Virginia, you know. I was going to be a driver for this big political affairs firm down there, you know. And you drive these guys and drive them to the White House and over here. And I could hear them back then, remember the phones in the car, the big thick cords. And they'd be on there talking their big, you know, lobbyist business and all this other stuff. And I was really in the mix of something important and exciting, you know. And I was just the driver. They used to call it shine boys, you know, and like, oh, jump here, drive me there, pick up my wife, you know, blah, blah, blah. You did it all, you know. And for that, you know, you go drink with them, you know. They, like, really, like, let you in on the inside of what they were talking about. And they were great guys, actually. But what I got out of that was like, man, these guys aren't that smart, you know. Like, all they do is they have a lot of money, they drink, and, you know, they know a lot of people. I was like, I could do that, you know. And, and lo and behold, I did find something that is similar to that, sales. You know, actually, I remember one time I put on a blinding drunk, and I blew off the President of the United States. Basically, I was a part of the advance team for an event. Now, I was one of many, many people putting this on here. I mean, but it was important. Like, I was a paid person in this campaign, and I just got too drunk. You know, I didn't show up. You know, I remember them calling. Were you there? I was like, oh, yeah, I was there. I was in the back with the banner. You know, just trying to lie, you know. Alcohol was seriously affecting my life. And, you know, especially if you're new, like, more, you know, even when the fog started lifting, like, I just have 4 years sober, I can still look back at how my untreated alcoholism was affecting my life from a very young age. You know, but I'm not one of those people that got into, like, legal troubles and ran my life in the ground. I was able to construct a life that allowed me to be an active alcoholic. I guess some people call it functional alcoholism. I don't know, whatever. But, you know, I was able to achieve things and drink a lot. And drinking at this point, you know, I met this woman who had some very similar goals in life. I wanted a woman that would stay home with my child, and I was making good bank at this point, you know. And it allowed me to construct this really great, like, sort of active alcoholic life. I was traveling, I drank, you know, didn't use my money to drink. Oh, no, I used to say, the shareholders want us to be happy, you know. They don't mind if I, you know, had the expense account, you know. But I think what's really important here is that at that point, alcohol really saved my life, you know, because the turmoil was getting greater inside of me. You know what I mean? And the decisions I'm making and the Middle East crisis, my mother and sister, the job, a lot of stuff going on up here, a lot, you know, and I'm judgmental. And God, if people would only do it this way, you know, we could all live in peace. You know, I fancied myself the great, you know, we'll have this war over here, we'll do this, we'll solve everything, you know. It was also like a disquiet. You know what I mean? You ever go through a day and you're just getting like restless, right? I mean, people always say that in the doctor's opinion. It's such a great line, but to really think about that. Restless, irritable, and discontented. I don't like my life. Or I don't like yours. And you know, when that happens, like, it wasn't like I had to wrestle a bottle and chug it all down. I could go to work. And that's a lot of times, man, at this point, I would still be feeling the effects in the morning. I felt like I'm 200%. If I drink, then I'm only regular 100% like everyone else, you know, like my ego is really getting puffed up. But I would, you know, when I learned more about some of the medical stuff, which I particularly don't really much care about, but did hear that it takes a while to process as much as I was drinking, because I drink vast quantities of scotch. You know, I switched from beer to scotch in like my 30s, and because, you know, it's just turning into a gigantic, like, trash problem. You know what I mean? All these cans, and they're heavy, and, like, bottles everywhere, and, jeez. You know, and then it was, like, scotch, and I loved it. It tastes like medicine. You know, it was like, you know, it was like man's drink, you know? And I was like, well, I'll drink by quantity less, but that was so not true, you know? About maybe a month later, I would buy volume, drink as much scotch as I did beer, you know? I'd love to, you know, I don't know about you guys, but like, when I would drink, it'd be like, you know, like, I love this drink right here, right? Oh, love it, you know? But the one I really love is the next one, you know? It's like, this one's great. Don't you dare try to take it away from me or get in the way. But it's that next one I loved, you know? It really was. The phenomenon of craving is described in the doctor's opinion. I really get that, and I think I always had it. And it doesn't mean that I drank every last drop every single time at this point in my drinking. I also like what it says in the book. Can you both control and enjoy your drinking? is not true for me, you know. And so I was talking about that, like, sort of what alcohol did for me, you know. You're going along your day and you're trying to do all this work, and Clancy I talks a lot about this spring tightening in your gut, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and you're just like, and then you take that drink. Let's say it's like a double for me, you know, and all of a sudden it'd be, yeah, baby, it's going to be all right. You know what I mean? It's going to be okay. Feeling all right. You know, now, of course, the craving hits, you know, and I'm, well, that one's all right. I'm going to feel even better. Yeah, you know, a few more. You know, it does something for me, man. You know, it just, you know, people say spiritual malady or it's a disease and that whole debate sometimes and all that. All I know for me is that it relates to what it says in the doctor's opinion, that without Alcoholics Anonymous, right, the only thing that's ever taken that away from me is alcohol. You know, it does something for me. And that's, so I guess I would have to drink. But it didn't look like that then. You know what I mean? I mean, I never went 2 days in a row without drinking. I would go every other day sometimes, you know? So it wasn't like I had to go the whole time. But I had a living problem, not a drinking problem. You know, I can't, how long can I hold my breath for? How tight can that spring get? How irritable am I going to be? You know what I mean? How crazy is it going to get up here? You know what I mean? And you can try to act all you want. After a while, people start to notice, you know? And alcohol took that away from me. I remember being at a conference. It was a few years later. I'm married now. And so at this conference, and, you know, we go to these things, and I was, for the shareholders and clients, you know, it was very important for a guy to procure maybe us, you know, another room or another stash of alcohol for the after party. You know what I mean? Very important for our business, right? Usually it's me and my colleagues, and I had one or two I tended to be paired with. Well, problem drinking clients, because, you know, birds of a feather. And I could always talk about business no matter how drunk I got. I could always stay on message, you know. And but we were at this one resort in Florida. I was shocked. I couldn't bribe anybody. Like, they're like, no, you can't do that. Like, we cut off at 12, no alcohol. And I was like, See this? You know, that's a $100 bill. Like, you don't understand. Like, of course we can. Like, come on, work with me. These people know. And I was, like, shocked, and I realized, like, how am I going to go to sleep tonight? You know what I mean? Like, alcohol also helped me go to sleep when this is going, you know? I needed to drink to calm down, quiet it, you know? And I was a little nervous, you know? And now, mind you, I'm sitting at an open bar. It's going to be open for another 2 hours, but I've already been drinking, and the craving, you know, I'm getting nervous, you know? So I go up to the bar. It's an open bar. We're paying for it all, you know? It's the host, and I say, give me I ask for 4 quadruple Johnny Walker Blacks. No ice. In other words, give me a giant glass of scotch, you know what I mean, like that big. So he does. And I give him the $100, you know, and I proceeded to kind of go around this big, like, hotel lobby with the bars in the middle, and there were all these planters, and I put them in the planters, you know, kind of like hid them in there. And then after the thing was over, now I'm done drinking all the open bar stuff. And so, you know, people are going like, oh, yeah, what do you think about, you know, and I kind of cruise up like, oh, yeah, yeah, sure. You know, kind of like reach into the planter and pull out a giant glass of scotch and drink like, you know, and then, you know, these guys are boring and they're nursing a drink. But, you know, I cruise over to the other one. And I think maybe the second one or third one, I pulled this out and someone saw me, like, that I work with. And they're like, did you just pull that out of the planter? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was the greatest idea ever. And, you know, it caused some embarrassment, you know what I mean? Like, a major client standing right there, you know, a senior vice president's looking at me like, what is your, really? Like, did you just do that? You know, I mean, that's where I was at, you know. I had to go to sleep. What was I going to do? You know, I'm sure you all understand. Like, I needed it, you know. So anyway, drinking just did something for me. It took that all away, all that internal turmoil and stuff, and a lot of unresolved issues maybe with my brother and guilt and who knows what, you know. But I don't ever want to make that an excuse, you know. I just know it fixed something inside of me, made it okay to breathe. So I'm going along. You know, there's something about alcoholism, you know, it's progressive. You know what I mean? Like, it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And I'm having a lot of trouble with my relationships, you know. I'm starting to struggle at work because I came across a senior vice president who didn't find it so charming, my drinking and my heavy swagger, riverboat gambler kind of attitude, you know. In fact, he really didn't like it very much at all. And, you know, it started getting darker. I guess, you know, it's like alcoholism progresses like this, right, and upward maybe is if badness is going up there, you know, it's like, my alcoholism's getting worse, but what's happening inside, I don't know if this is even a word, was a digression, right? Here's a progression, here's the opposite curve, and it's what's happening inside me. You know, it was like alcohol, I used to think about it as a tidal action, right? Like, imagine, like, I live in my head a lot, you know? So, like, I imagine, like, the beach of me, you know, little pieces of me, the sand, and this tidal action is just rolling up on it, taking a little piece of me away to the void every day, just a little bit, you know what I mean, just eroding me, you know, and my ability to really feel any happiness anymore, or to be present with my son, just, it wasn't there anymore. I was dying on the inside, I was dead, you know, dead, living in a beautiful house in Chevy Chase. To the outside world, looks like I got it all, you know. And little do they know the insanity that's going on inside of that house. You know, this woman I'm married to, man, she's really feeling the brunt of all this, you know. And I think she knew that I'm so stubborn that it was drinking. Now, her mother kind of a couple of times, but, you know, when someone would come up to me then and say, "Guy, you know, Jesus, you know, you really need to slow down. You know, your drinking is really a problem." It was that old thought, you don't know what's good for me. You know, and I don't know that would have been like, it wasn't even like, I need it, or, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. It was just not an option. All great men drink, like the book says. You know what I mean? Like, that was Bill's, I really relate to Bill. He's a maniac. I love Bob because of this spiritual candor in this program, you know. But Bob was a raving lunatic and a maniac, and I really relate to that. But he says that in his story. He'd say, oh, all great men drink. I was like, well, Winston Churchill, a personal favorite of mine in history. And I was like, he drank? You know? It just wasn't an option. You know? And so there's a lot to pay, you know. My insides, man, it's just hard to go through life like that, you know. You just feel so disconnected. And after a piece, after a while, you know, I lost that job, that big job, you know. All of a sudden, this monster recession hits, very much white-collar in nature, at least where I was living. And I thought I could take all my state procurement experience and simply transfer it over to federal, you know. No, you know, and I'm going to lose this house, and people are crying about my drinking. And the book talks about your problems piling up and becoming astonishingly difficult to solve. I had this incontinent dog, you know, and I just couldn't ever seem to clean up after it. You know what I mean? I would, like, let this dog urine sit in this beautiful house on beautiful hardwood floors, you know. My then wife would be like, "Can you just clip the rose bushes?" Like, I just couldn't seem to do anything. You know what I mean? Nothing. I just lived in my basement, you know. And I lost that job, and things really got dark, you know. And I'm embarrassed to say this in front of, you know, women or whatever, but, you know, I would call that woman horrible things. And at this point, I never blacked out during my drinking, maybe 20 years drinking, you know, hard, you know. And, but sometimes people say, like, alcohol stopped working for them. And I understand what they're getting at, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't going to totally solve problems or, you know, whatever. I get that. Alcohol has always worked for me, will work for me tonight, and could work for me tomorrow if I let it. You know, it brings me that shortcut, but man, did the side effects start to change. You know, all of a sudden, I'm not just sleeping. I can't, like, just kind of nod out after a fifth. You know, all of a sudden, I'm not so sure what I said last night. You know what I mean? I remember laying there in my king-size bed, and it faced our bathroom door, like kind of like you faced right at it, you know? And I remember coming to is really what I was doing those days. You know, I wasn't waking up anymore. I was coming to. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming to, and I looked at her. She's kind of bent over doing her makeup, so I couldn't, you know, I could see her derriere and her legs, but she was leaned forward. And I remember when she leaned back, the look on her face, man, whew, not good. You know what I mean? Like, something bad happened last night, you know. And I just looked at her, and she's like, "Don't you remember what you said to me?" And when she told me the things, and I tried to deny it, spin it, and manipulate it back, you know. but I couldn't reckon that. You know? And then sometime after that, on Easter of 2009, my friend, who I'm actually living with right now, my friend, his family was leaving, my family was leaving. I don't know about you guys, but when I drank and my family, the taillights left the corner, around the corner, it was like, woohoo, do whatever I want now, it's my castle, you know? And we went downtown and we're doing a lot of a white powdery substance that will keep you awake, you know? That I had introduced that into my life as well. And we just started drinking. And for whatever reason, like I was saying, the side effects were different. All of a sudden, I got really, like, drunk. You know what I mean? And we were in my house. I fell down the stairs, and you might even be able to see, I split my scalp open. I went head first down the stairs, and my friend said, I flew like face down. You know, it wasn't like a brrr, tumble. And I went straight down. He said, I landed with my head went right to the wall. And he said, I put down that glass of scotch like this. Conk. It's the last thing to go, you know. And after that happened, you know, and talk about powerlessness. I remember that next morning, I still had scotch, and I still had this other stuff. And I didn't stop, couldn't stop. And every time I would start to drink, it would, like, this action would give me a back spasm that would drop me to the floor. Or if I inhaled deeply, if you know what I mean, like, that would drop me. And I would do that repeatedly that entire Saturday after Good Friday in 2009. I understand powerlessness, you know, in that respect. And, you know, when she was coming home on Monday, it looked like Frankenstein stitches. We ain't going to get around that, you know what I mean? And it was like me or the bottle. We finally had that conversation, and I couldn't stop, you know. So after a time, you know, I was asked to leave my home, and I moved into a little apartment, Triangle Towers over there in Bethesda, and, you know, I had a balcony I was terrified of. Like Bill talks about leaping out of the window sash and all. I used to have the sensation that I was going to be sucked out of that window, or I would run right over the balcony and not be able to stop myself. I mean, seriously. Dark times, man, you know. And I got to find out what a guy like me does, unfettered from familiar relations, an American Express card that's got plenty of mileage left, and just me. And it was dark. To the point that when sometimes when I was able to be on that balcony, you would see, you know, early in the morning, you know, the mom and her kid in a stroller, you know, walking along. I'm like up here watching them. And I'd see, like, the businessman going to work. I'd see the jogger, you know. And I'd say, I am so not like those people. I'm so disconnected from humanity. You know, I'm like an alien, you know. It was dark. You know what I mean? You say, you know, it's like it's darkest before the dawn, you know. And I remember one night they had an intervention for me and our day. And I wouldn't have it. I just, that's, you know, selfish and just closed-minded. I would not ask for help. I never wanted to stop drinking. But that night, after drinking quite a bit, the side effects, like I said, had changed, and I was left awake with my own thoughts. And where my thoughts went is my son crying at my, it's so fresh, even 4 years later, you know, it was my son crying at my funeral, where's my daddy? Why did he do this? And I thought about that probably for about 6 hours straight. I couldn't get it out of my head. And I know they say that you get sober for yourself, but in this instance, that's clearly not the case. You know, I guess that there was some shred of me still inside that I wasn't that selfish, you know, because I had had a clear cut. You know, when life is a veil of tears and it is only sharp pieces, even if you only get the relief from that drink for 2 minutes, that's 2 minutes you need. You know what I mean? And that's where my world had gotten. And I knew I couldn't do it, and if I didn't ask for help, I was not going to be able to stop from killing myself. I couldn't take this world anymore. And I got help. Went to this very fancy rehab, you know, and it was okay. They got me there the first night, and they were like, man, can't take you. You know, it was like 258 over, you know, 90 or 105, I think it was. Some crazy. They were like, you're going to explode any minute. You know? So I spent the first night in the ER in the hospital and came back and smelled and started doing the whole rehab thing, you know. And I did start to feel better, you know what I mean? And I didn't get anything out of those counseling sessions except for talking with other people. You know, maybe I'm just a people person, man. It was like brothers talking about shit, about stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it was, I found that helpful. And the AA meetings, honestly, I did like them, but I liked the horror stories. You know, you weren't allowed to read any fiction or anything, and all the drunkalogues, but I guess that's what our book tells us, right? New people, that's what they relate to, drinking, right? Don't lead with the chin with all the God stuff. So I guess it was Alcoholics Anonymous in action. I liked the war stories, and I felt better afterwards, you know. And all the other relapse cycles and triggers this and triggers that and psychology and, oh, the gabba gamma, gomba, goomba, blah, and your chemicals do that. I could care less, you know. You tell me a pixie has entered me, you know, and that's why I drank. I didn't care. What does it matter? I can't stop drinking, and I will be more insane if I stop. That's all I knew. You know what I mean? The world was a trigger. I was in it, wasn't I? You know? So, rehab was good. They definitely gave me an opportunity to experience Alcoholics Anonymous. There was I'll just mention his name because he's passed. And I don't hear him a lot anymore. It was Father Martin, you know? And he had this thing called Chalk Talk. And it may have been very dated, and it was funny to see the hairstyles and the dress that everyone wore. But I just related to that guy, and I was like, God, this is some priest. By the way, I was a hardcore atheist, by the way, in case you didn't get that. Like, I explored a lot of, you know, nihilism and existentialism and all this stuff. Like, me and God were, and I wouldn't mind telling you, like, if you brought up your faith to me, oh boy, we have a lot to talk about. You know what I mean? I used to say, God is the big invisible friend for adults. You know, little did I know how right I was. But, you know, so I'm in this rehab, and I'm just, yeah, and I was like, you know what I'm not going to do? I am not going to trade one addiction for another. You know, I'll go to a meeting, okay? I'm not just going to be like some AA robot, you know, but I got out of that rehab. I was feeling good. Oh, I should mention this, too, and this is key for me. It's maybe the second step. I knew I was insane because 2 weeks I was as physically sober as I was ever going to be in that rehab. And I had this obsession to drink that fell on me. Like, I'm going to leave this place right now. It's nobody better get in my way. It was on. And I knew I didn't want to drink. And I knew I had every reason not to drink. But, man, it was an obsession. Flat out, full-blown obsession to drink. And I'm just lucky, I guess. You know, I can see it for what it was. That was insane. I was insane. You know? So I knew I had this thing at that moment. When I saw my son just getting out of that place, it was December 5th. That was January. I spent the holidays, right? So December 7th. So I got out on January 5th. And those of you who remember 09 into 010, pretty snowy year. And December 5th was snowing quite hard in Bethesda. And I went over to see my son. I came out of rehab, and there was an eviction notice on my apartment. I was like, yeah, actually, I was in pretty good space, actually. I was like, all right, we'll deal with this tomorrow, you know. But I went and saw my son, and who was not allowed to see me. And I don't mind telling you, I saw that little boy, and I knew everything was not going to be all right. Not going to be all right. Not if I was managing things anyway. You know, I caused significant harm. And when you start to get sober a little bit, the delusions start to slip, and you start to see what really happened. And that can be very, very painful, you know. And so I ran to AA. I mean, I was skidding my car all through the snowy streets. I ran to the local clubhouse. Then I ran to another meeting. And I remember walking in, this guy going, oh, you're a newcomer, great. Actually, the first people I met in the first meeting, I walked in, and for whatever reason at this clubhouse, he turned the lights down for the 6 o'clock meeting. It was dark. There were two really, really old guys. And I walked in, I was like, hi, my name's Guy. I just got out of a 28-day facility. This is my first meeting. They're like, oh, nice. And I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a rocky road. And then luckily, the dude in the kitchen was this younger guy. He's like, oh, great, come on in. He started introducing me to people, you know. And he's like, this is Gerald. And Gerald's like, oh, you're new, that's wonderful. We just started a beginner's meeting. I was like, I'm in. He's like, yeah, it starts at 6:45 in the morning. I was like, ah. It actually ended up being my home group because I decided to try to do things differently than I ever had before. Or actually, not my home group, but a meeting I would attend regularly. And some time later, I heard a man's story, and that Thursday, I think, and I knew, you know, I'd gone to so many psychiatrists, and I could get over on him, and there's something about this guy who's all about the book. I don't know why. Even my counselor in rehab told me, oh, you should read N.A. That book was written years ago. Thank God I didn't listen to her. you know. But he was all about this book right here, you know. And he had a crazy story. Like, I was like, that dude can make it, like, you know. And I went to this meeting of young people, and they were like, what's your number? What are you doing tomorrow? Hey, man, I'll call you tomorrow. And the weirdest thing was I knew they were going to. You know what I mean? Like, these people were going to call me. And, like, they were making plans with me. I was like, woo, okay, you know. And you know, that night was really, like, kind of, for me, like, I feel like the second step happened to me. You know, I was in my little apartment, the same one that I'd been in for a lot of that craziness towards the end, and the balcony, you know. And I remember that night I fell to my knees crying and praying to a God I did not even believe in, thanking him for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and for me that's the second step, because I was so beaten up, I think, and so scared that I was like, this might work for me. You know what I mean? A glimmer of hope. Like, I had a feeling I was actually going to call this guy, and I might actually listen to what he suggested. I might actually listen to someone else's ideas of what was good for me. And we got right into step work, you know. For me, the third step was a transformational thing, because I got so spun out about God's will, and yeah, I'm still trying. You know, God for me, you know, they said make your own. And I knew about love, because I knew how I felt for my son. And I know that I had always felt like it was the most powerfulest force in the universe, because I saw it bring down kings in history. I saw it ennoble entire peoples. You know, the power, and you can't see it, and you can't touch it, and it can affect everyone. So I always thought love was a pretty powerful thing. And I love Star Wars, so it's definitely Yoda. I was all into that, like, good side, dark side, hate leads to blah, you know, and this, and the man, you know, but that was as far as it went. It was like, A.A., Yoda, love. That was my God. You know what I mean? And so the third step, though, people would always talk about God's will, this, and this, and turn it over, and the will, and the will. And I got so spun out. And honestly, I read the 12 and 12, and I got even more confused. You know, of course, my spouse said, did I tell you to read that? You know, like, you know, and, you know, and I'm doing service, too. You know, he got me into service from Jump Street. I was answering phones. I had 3-4 service positions. And I remember I had a car, and people found that very strange in AA. Like, you're new, and you have a car? You know? So, you know, I started filling my car up with people, and that's honestly one of the most valuable relationships I have today, was because of that advice. Sorry, my pigeon brother helped me out a lot this week. But I'm full of emotional. Whew. So anyway, so, like, the third step, man, was, you know, was all this talk about God's will. I read what was in the book, you know, and what the book said, and I really got it. He told me to read 6064 every day, and I read that, and I was like, my self-centeredness will kill me. You know, and when I'm thinking about, oh, I lost the wife, and oh, the money, oh, you know, or my little boy, you know what I mean? Or that, right? I'm looking backwards, or I'm looking forwards. Man, I'm 43, it's all gone, you know? I'm sober, so what? You know, it's all over. And so now I'm looking forward. Man, when you're looking backwards like that, and you're looking forwards, you're getting thirsty, or at least you are if you're me. You know, and I had some terrible dark thoughts in that time. And then I saw the truth of what the third step was telling me. My self-centeredness was going to kill me. And I had to ask for help. And it had to come from something bigger than me, you know. And that I found a great relief in recovery, and I still do to this day. Especially the part about the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage my own life well. Which I have a recent example of it not working. Fourth and fifth step, you know, I mean, I was, I remember I was on the fourth step, and I was so foggy for so long. When I look at my fourth step now, it's like bizarre to me. It's like, God, I really changed. But, and I was on the fourth column of my fourth step in the resentment part, where it's my part, you know, and I had a little, let's take our time with this. And my sponsor, who can be, you know, he can be something, that guy. And, I saw him at our home group, and he's like, so how's that fourth step coming? I was like, you know, well, on Tuesday, you know, I think we're going to have, he's like, cut me off. He's like, you know what we're not going to do? We're not going to talk about your intentions. We're going to talk about what you've done in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I turned around, I was like, that fucking junkie, who is he to talk to me like that? You know, the man who's answering all of my phone calls, you know, when I'm sobbing just like I am now, you know what I mean? And I remember 2 days later, being in a movie theater with my son, I'm now allowed to see him alone, you know, and Sitting there in a movie, I love to eat. By the way, that's what saved me from that obsession rehab. The dinner bell rang, you know. But anyway, so sitting in a movie theater and a big bucket of popcorn, action hero movie, my little boy next to me, you know. Why can't I stop thinking about drinking? You know, why? Hated that. God, I hated that. An obsession to me is an unwelcome thought which I cannot expel from my mind. Obsessions, you know. And I knew it, you know. And I remember crying to him, calling him. I was like, when is this ever going to go away? They keep telling me it's going to go away. When? And he said, well, when do you want to feel better? And I was like, a guy like me always wants to feel better. Right now, you know, I always will and always will want to feel better right now. And he said, well, why don't you get busy on your fourth step? You know, so it was kind of like a, you know, it was a carrot and stick. It was a stick first and then a carrot. That I wrote and I started writing. I didn't know I was going to do my fifth step when I went over to his house, but that's what happened. And I know for me, I've never had the obsession to drink again. It was removed. I guess it can come back, you know, depending on my actions here in AA, you know. And I can tell you, and I definitely want to talk about this too, because I got about 5 minutes left, but AA is not only... Because I have a living problem, right, not a drinking problem, in the steps, in the principles, and the actions in this book, in the fellowship, you know, I not only don't have that living problem so much, I have a good life. You know what I mean? Like, I have had moments of peace. We're going to talk about a spiritual experience. This might sound corny and stupid. I hadn't even had a year sober yet, and I took my son to the Maryland State Fair, and we're sitting there, and he looks at this little, like, spinny ride, like it's like a little paraglider kind of ride. And it was a little, maybe a little too young for him. He's kind of a big kid like his dad, you know. And he's like, I think I'd like to go on that ride. And, you know, I'm probably, you know, it's too big. I was like, no, you'll fit. You know? I was like, it's all right, son, you know, go ahead. And so he goes on this little ride, and I see him. He looks so happy. And he's spinning around, and I'm sitting there, like standing back watching him, and the sun's shining. I'm standing there, and I realize I'm there. You know what I mean? Like, I am so present right then and there, you know? And that, to me, blew me away, you know? What a gift, you know? I ended up, 6 and 7 are always kind of weird and sort of an art rather than a science, perhaps. But I knew one thing. It says to pray. It says what to pray. And so I pray that, you know? It's been a work in progress for sure. I've definitely gotten started on my amends. It's something that I've been lax in, you know, at times. They say in my pigeon family, you know, that it's a series of recommitments in AA. You know what I mean? Maybe we're just like that. It has been for me. And I can definitely stay in the middle of AA, right? Sponsor check, home group check, service check. But it really is an inside job, you know. But I've enjoyed a life these 4 years. It's hard to describe, you know. There's been sources of joy I could scarcely imagine. There have been things that I've felt in my heart because I have concern for other human beings that can be, it can be sad, you know what I mean? Because what we deal with is very serious, you know. But to have that kind of compassion for another human being and the humility, I say this often, the steps have shown me, you know, this shift. It talks about a psychic change, you know. I found a much more fundamental God than AA, Yoda, and love. Although the love part is probably the biggest component. You know, love, not rules. And what I found in maybe some of that 6th and 7th and having done a personal inventory and all this other, and making some amends, was this sense of humility, which comes from, I was told, from a Jesuit, you know what I mean? Those guys are pretty smart, you know what I'm saying? And one of us. And he told me that comes from the Latin word humus, which means ground, and many people had misinterpreted that as meaning dirt or dirty or humiliation. But he said it was humus meaning ground, meaning my feet are on the ground, that I'm in right proportion to the world, you know, and that is another great gift that the steps have given me, you know. If I believe that I am a flawed child of a loving God, then how, and I believe we all are, how can I look at you and judge you? Right? You know what I mean? How can I ask for this forgiveness and this love that I get unconditionally and then turn right back around and not give it to another, my brother or sister? You know what I mean? That we're all flawed human beings of a loving God, all children, you know? And, you know, the ha-ha, some are sicker than others. I certainly laugh about that sometimes with close friends, you know? But It's the truth for me. And that's another wonderful thing I've gotten from this thing. In this few minutes, though, and I suppose this is the cautionary part, and I'm a little bit emotional, I had an experience recently where I was engaged to be married, and I lived in Frederick, and, you know, and I lost that this week, you know. And it was from not practicing these principles in all of my affairs. You know, there was a secret from some years ago that I kept to myself and my sponsor. I felt too ashamed to talk to him about it. And I didn't want to see a direct correlation, you know. But certainly something happened, you know, and I got a little sicker. You know, and I've been in the middle of AA, you know what I mean? But you have to practice these principles in all of your affairs. That's what I've learned fundamentally, that I do have a living problem. You know, it's not about drinking. And I was so distraught on Wednesday evening that, you know, it was either, you know, not be here anymore, right? That crossed my mind. But, of course, I can't be that selfish. And I was like, if I drank right now, I'll feel better. You know, there might be mayhem later, but when did I ever care about that? You know, but right now, I wouldn't have to feel what I'm feeling right now. And it wasn't even like it just wasn't an option. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't want to be so sly about that. I'm powerless over alcohol, but I'm powerless over alcohol because I'm powerless over my alcoholic mind. You know, like that thought occurred to me, and it just wasn't an option. And I don't mind telling you, though, that at only 4 years sober, but for an alcoholic like me, when you can't drink and you can't take another shortcut, that hurts. That hurts a lot, you know. But I've had God enter my life in ways which I cannot even describe. I had a friend of mine call me out of nowhere that I hadn't talked to, said, come stay with me. I had a guy from up there in Frederick, John, a wonderful man, and he's calling me, telling me that he had a very, very, very similar experience, that he was in the same exact place, sitting in a hotel room by myself watching the snow, you know what I mean? And he's saying, like, and here's what I did, and I knew that someday I would be able to turn this experience and help someone else. And as he's telling me this, it's true. You know what I mean? Like, as he's saying it to me, I know it's true because he's helping me and he was just there, or had been some years ago. That to me was powerful. You know? Friday, I'm walking down the street. I get a text that says, you know, be out by Sunday. You know, and I'm torn up. I'm so torn up from hurt. You know, I've hurt people again. You know what I mean? What am I going to do with that? You know, I'm not some spiritual giant. I made a mistake. I've hurt people I love. And I just get out. You know, and I start walking down. And I just get this text. And I look up, and there's my ex-wife standing right in front of me. I don't know why. You know, and she says, "What's wrong?" And this is a woman I owe amends to. That she's not ready, and it's not about me. It's about her. But it's a woman I owe amends to, you know? And she, I have no idea to this day what she's doing there, this day, 2 days later. And she goes, come in and talk. And she talked to me, and she was a friend to me, a woman that I owe amends to about this. And I told her the truth about what was going on, you know? I mean, man, I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys, but man, I just had to say, like, how does this happen? You're telling me there's not something in my life right now? I don't think so, you know? So even though I'm weepy and all this, I know that Alcoholics Anonymous works, you know? I mean, especially if you're, like, all about, like, the drinking problem right now, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I can tell you that if you stay in the middle of this thing, the certain low points ahead, as the book says, right, that you will be able to surmount them, you know what I mean? That I can turn these things in a good purpose. That I had made this commitment to speak at this meeting some time ago when it was, I don't want to say the day of wine and roses, but, you know, I was in tall cotton. You know, and here I am now, you know. So I think I'm going over a little bit. Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely works. It has produced into me a radical transformation, and it has given me a great life, you know, a great life. And if anyone can hear this, you know, or whoever may be listening, you know, it will work for you if you're just willing and honest. And I thank you all very much. I think I'm ending on time. Thanks. Yeah.